Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. Happy Friday to you. My name is Mark Shiver. Glad to have you listening to the program today. We have a packed program. We've got Tim Boyum, anchor of Capital Tonight. Of course, you can watch that on the Time Warner Cable News channel. Also, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest will be stopping by, and we always enjoy talking with our state's great Lieutenant Governor. And, of course, the rest of the show, we'll be talking about something controversial, as usual, House Bill 2, and some special guests, the Benham brothers, David and Jason. You might remember they were going to do a show on HGTV. They got canned because they said some things that people didn't like, and so we'll be talking to them about how the NCAA is being used by the LGBT sexual revolution and several other things. Looking forward to having them on the program today. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at WhatMattersNC. You can hit me up at Mark Shiver. And as we go into the weekend, just want to kind of touch on a topic quickly. The Civil Rights Commission, Martin Castro heads that up in the Obama administration, and basically he's written a document that basically says that religious liberty and religious freedom are code words for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, Christian supremacy, or any form of intolerance. So now the First Amendment is directly in the crosshairs of the Obama administration, and quite a lot of pushback coming from a lot of different sources on this report and statement issued by the Civil Rights Commission. And so we'll be talking with the Benham brothers about that also a little bit later in the program. So we're going to get right to it. Thank you for listening. And as always, tell your friends to go to freedomactionnetwork.com and listen to What Matters in North Carolina and also our other shows, NC Gun Dad, Free to Brew. And you can also find us, of course, in the iTunes Store and the Google Play Store as well. Joining us now, it's always our pleasure to have Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. He's Lieutenant Governor of our fine state here in North Carolina. And Lieutenant Governor, I understand that you're making a trip right now, kind of a sad occasion.
Yeah, we're heading down to Shelby right now to the police officer's funeral who was shot in the line of duty last week. So it's not one of your favorite things to do as a public official, but it's certainly a good thing to do.
Well, I know that the family will appreciate you being in attendance. And some of the things that we've been dealing with in North Carolina of late, unfortunately, House Bill 2 doesn't seem to want to go away. I'll have to tell you, Lieutenant Governor, I was really impressed and pleased with the statement that you released when the NCAA decided to take championship games out of our state.
Well, thanks. I mean, you know, you hate that you have to continue to be on defense on this issue. The media obviously won't allow you to be on offense. It's absolutely incomprehensible that the NCAA or the ACC or the NBA, any of them, you know, they don't operate by the same rules that they're demanding that we operate by. And so they want North Carolina to allow men into women's showers. But they don't do that in their own organizations. I mean, the NBA and the WNBA don't share locker rooms and showers. The NCAA has men's and women's sports still, so they recognize the biological sex difference between men and women, and they still protect women in showers. They don't just allow their male basketball players to go shower with their female basketball players, and neither does the ACC. But the hypocrisy of what they're saying is, we demand, North Carolina, that you step in, up and do something that we don't even do within our own organizations. And, Mark, you probably read the transgender requirements for a man to play women's sports in the NCAA. They're very strict, far more strict than any law that's on the books in North Carolina. So quite a double standard, but here's the deal. You know, as we've talked about it many times, this is a political battle. They wait till the 11th hour to pull out all the stops here because it's a political campaign, and that's what we're up against.
Our guest, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, here on What Matters in North Carolina. And Lieutenant Governor, it really is disturbing because I've talked to some, you know, just regular folks who are not immersed in politics, and they pick up their morning paper and all they see is, you know, mean old Governor McCrory and that mean old General Assembly. And it's really a challenge to get the truth out to everyday folks who, as you mentioned, are being bombarded by the media with, only part of the story.
Yeah, no doubt about it. First of all, those folks should stop reading those liberal rags that they pick up and call news. But, they should get their news somewhere else, like from your show. But listen, yeah, I mean, that is the ultimate challenge. Is that this is their good at their game, right? I mean, you could script this thing out from 6 months ago. Here's how the human rights campaign works. Here's how the media is going to work because they're in complete cahoots with them. And you're just going to keep rolling out one attack after another to make North Carolina look discriminatory. But listen, here, think about who the NCAA is. Who is the board of governors on the NCAA that made the decision to pull out? It's a bunch of liberal professors who became liberal college presidents at liberal universities across the country. And they decided that, guess what? We're going to pull. They don't care. They don't care about the sports team or the sports fan or the players in the NCAA. They have a political agenda. They don't want to see us get reelected because we have different worldviews. So that's really what you're up against.
Our guest is Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, and doing a really, really fine job as Lieutenant Governor of our state. Part of the challenge that the state has faced over the last few years, Lieutenant Governor Forrest, has been the rebuilding of the financial ruin, I like to call it, that the previous majority in the General Assembly had left the state in. The story that the General Assembly and Governor McCrory and certainly yourself have to tell is quite remarkable about all of the economic progress that has been made in North Carolina. I just stand back and really I marvel, because it's not just one thing, but there is a litany, a list that just is filled with positive news about our state.
Yeah, I mean, there is, but where do you ever see it in the news? You don't see it in the papers. You don't see it on the evening news. You don't see it anywhere. We rely on folks like you to try to get that message out and tell North Carolinians about it. It's amazingly unfortunate that that's the case, but that is exactly why the Charlotte bathroom ordinance was created. They created it as a third rail to politics because they cannot win on the economy and they cannot win on education. So they had to create a distraction to keep us from talking about the economy and education, to keep us on defense so we can't get on offense. Because if we ever were able to get on offense, then we'd absolutely win. You remember back when Mitt Romney was running, the exact same thing happened. Distraction, 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 because nobody wanted to talk about Barack Obama's economy because it was miserable failure at the time. And so they just kept the distractions coming, and Mitt Romney could never get on offense. So, that's where we find ourselves, too, is not having the ability to get on offense because we don't have the means to do it. We don't have the money to get up on media to purchase it all, and then we have the opposite effect, is that the media is coming against us at every turn and telling lies about all the things we've been doing.
Lieutenant Governor Forrest, I was reading a piece this morning that someone had written as a summary of the debate that you recently had with Linda Coleman, who is also running for lieutenant governor. You're running for re-election, and it's amazing to me some of the things that were written about this, saying that Lieutenant Linda Coleman is still banging that tired drum that Republicans have cut education, when in fact education spending, if someone just looks at a budget in black and white, the figure from one year to the next keeps going up. So this is just a tired old refrain, and frankly I'm surprised that somebody would keep banging that drum when it's just not true.
Well, Roy Cooper's still banging it too. I mean, he has new commercials out talking about cutting education and how horrible we're doing in education. Nobody's claiming victory for education in North Carolina, Mark. You know that. We have a long way to go.
But, sure.
Elections are about comparisons here. Let's go back and look at the previous administration. It was cut $1.25 billion out of K-12 education, cut teacher pay, stopped the teacher step increases, lay off 4,200 teachers, put the state in a $3 billion deficit, have nearly $3 billion in unemployment insurance debt that we had to figure out how to pay back. I mean, you can go on and on and on and on. $2 billion hole in Medicaid.
Yeah.
We fixed all that. Every bit of that we have fixed in just a very few short years here. But again, that's not the narrative you hear from the other side. You know, a piece of good news that came out just a couple of days ago was that average family income in North Carolina is growing faster than the rest of the nation. That's a pretty good signal that some things are going well here.
Oh, absolutely. And North Carolina's unemployment rate is outpacing that of the country. Our, 300,000 net jobs in the last 4 years. Lieutenant Governor, as I said, the list just goes on and on of the positive things that have been happening that people don't realize, I think, and really need to be reminded that, you know, the budget deficit that the Republican majority was faced with when they took office, as you mentioned, the huge hole in Medicaid, the huge hole in unemployment. Not only have these things been dealt with in the balanced budget for the past several years, but the state is running at a surplus. Taxes have been cut. You know, it's just incredible.
Yeah, there is not another state in the nation that has the same story we do in such a short period of time. There's some other great states out there even that we're still competing with. You know, I mean, I think we have to look at the folks we're chasing, like Utah for business climate. We still want to catch up with them. They're number one. We're number two for best place to grow business. And you know, we need to obviously look at places like Texas where people continue to want to move. You know, we need to continue to work on our income tax and taking that down even more, putting more money in people's pockets. But yeah, you know, and nearly $5 billion in tax cuts, a surplus in the state now, a year over year of about $500 million every year, even while we're doing all those things. We're seeing personal income tax revenue increase for the state, even while we're cutting personal income tax, which means that more people are back to work and jobs are being created. And so there is no shortage of the story. You and I could sit here and probably reel off facts for an hour straight of just the success stories that we've created in North Carolina in a few short years. And so, you know, hopefully, Mark, we're going to have the opportunity to get on TV and get on radio in the next few months or next couple months before the election and tell people the story. Just again, because it's sad the media doesn't, but we know what their agenda is. And this has always been the game. And so here you are right in the middle of it.
Well, Lieutenant Governor Forrest, I know that you are doing all that you can to spread the word about the good things that are happening in North Carolina. One issue that may slap some people in the face here in the next few months, insurance companies not wanting to continue as part of offering, you know, the Affordable Care Act to people in North Carolina. Is this something that has you concerned? I mean, what are folks going to do if there's only one carrier or maybe even none?
Yeah, I have family members who don't have insurance now because of Obamacare. You know, let's all remember the refrain here again. Remember what elections are about. The refrain from the president, if you like your doctor, you get to keep them. If you like your health insurance provider, you get to keep it. If you like your plan, you get to keep it. And that was hammered and hammered and hammered. Nothing's going to change. And we knew just the opposite. I mean, we all knew that. We were all saying that's not possible. You can't possibly do that under this plan. And now we're seeing it come to fruition that, you know, they were touting it was going to be more competition. It was going to bring more people into the market. More people are going to be excited about it. But no, they're moving towards socialized medicine and complete government control. And so when all these companies now say we can't afford to operate under Obamacare and they start pulling out, what is North Carolina left with? No competition, higher rates, everybody asking for more rates, Blue Cross Blue Shield having to sue the federal government to get paid for Medicaid. I mean, you just keep going on and on and on and on, and there's nothing good going on in healthcare right now. That's why you have to fully repeal and replace Obamacare as soon as possible.
Well, I certainly could tell you a story. I won't do it now, but I certainly got bit by Obamacare in my family, and it wasn't a very pleasant experience for sure. So as you look forward out over the horizon, Lieutenant Governor, I know that you're talking to a lot of people. You have people who are calling your office in response to things like the NBA, the NCAA, the ACC. What are people saying when they call your office? Are they telling you to stand firm? Are they complaining and saying
yeah,
you should repeal?
That's all we get, Mark. All we get is positive comments. People saying, stand strong, we're standing with you, have courage, don't bend, don't fold, all that kind of stuff. So that's really what people are saying. You know, I think we're in this set time our nation where people are, you know, just really eager for somebody to stand up and stand strong and not give in. I think they're tired of weak-kneed politicians and people that just bow down to a dollar or bow down to a basketball game, you know, and sacrifice women and girls. We're not going to do that. So you know, yeah, I mean, I think that people are eager for that. And North Carolina is obviously at the tip of the spear of the national election. It's the tip of the spear of this progressive ideology that says men should be able to go into women's showers. It's kind of genderless society, you know, that's being pushed by the wrongly called Human Rights Campaign. And so, you know, I think North Carolina has an opportunity to be a bold, courageous example to the rest of the nation and stand strong against this insanity. It's completely insane that we're even having this conversation week after week, day after day, but that's what the left wants us to do. They're trying to get us on our heels with it, and, you know, I don't think, Mark, there's a way to get on offense, but I do think there's a way to continue to dig your heels in and stand firm and say that we are not going to tolerate the abuse of women and girls in North Carolina. And, you know, I think we'll stand strong, and I think the people will honor that commitment.
Well, I wanted to let you know a little tidbit of information. The Civitas poll came out yesterday, and among those people that said they were supporting Governor McCrory, one of the reasons they gave was his stance on House Bill 2. And so I think that just confirms what you said, that the folks that are reaching out to your office and lobbying, you know, their opinion your way are not in favor of what Charlotte was trying to do, but in fact are in favor of protecting our wives and children.
Exactly. You know, I still think the majority of North Carolinians believe that men should go to men's rooms and women should go to women's rooms and men shouldn't be showering with women and boys shouldn't be showering with girls in high schools and so forth. And, you know, that regardless of the pain and the suffering that's going to happen from these leftist organizations and college presidents and everybody else, that they want us to stand strong. And they, I think, be proud of their state if we did.
One last question, Lieutenant Governor, our guest, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest here on What Matters in North Carolina. North Carolina, as you said, is at the tip of the spear. We're seeing Donald Trump or one of his surrogates here in the state almost on a daily basis, certainly weekly. The same with the Clinton campaign. Are you concerned that some of the statewide campaigns and elections might get lost in the noise of the presidential campaign?
Well, of course. I mean, that always sort of happens. So you have to hope for the best that the presidential campaigns actually draw out the people that are going to go down ballot and vote for you. You know, our bigger concerns are things like no straight ticket balloting and people not knowing that when they get in, they can't get in and just pull the R ticket. They got to go down and actually fill out the whole ballot. So everything when you get down ballot's about name recognition. You know, Run Forest Run is a good slogan for a reason. And so, you know, you hope people get down there and remember who you are or even, you know, think they know your name. So that's really what you're fighting for. And so right now, honestly, Mark, I've been around it. I see it's kind of palpable now. I go to these Trump events. I see the excitement surrounding it. And I really believe that Donald Trump is going to win by a large margin in North Carolina. And hopefully that translates down ballot for me and for the governor and for, you know, the judicial candidates and everybody else.
Well, we certainly will look forward to talking with you again soon, Lieutenant Governor Forrest. We're doing all that we can to, you know, just tell the truth. I think if we just tell the truth, people will certainly understand that all is not, as it may appear, blasted across the headlines of a local paper. So thank you very much. Have a safe trip to Shelby, and we'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thanks so much, Mark. Have a great day.
You too, sir. Thank you. It's always a pleasure every Friday to talk with Tim Boyum. He is the anchor of Capital Tonight on the Time Warner Cable News Channel. Tim, welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina.
Always good to be on, my friend.
Well, as usual, there's really nothing for us to talk about, is there?
Just another week, right?
Yeah, just another week in North Carolina. House Bill 2, the gift that keeps on giving, has not gone away, raised its head once again this week with the NCAA and the ACC moving some championship games out of the state. From where you sit, what are your thoughts about that whole thing?
Well, you know, honestly, I don't know if we could be overly surprised, particularly since the NBA made its decision. The remarks that the NCAA had made in other statements earlier, not only long after the bill was passed, but in subsequent questions that were asked of the NCAA. Once that shoe dropped, I don't think it was any surprise at all that the ACC made the same decision. And I would not be surprised if we see the CIAA move forward as well. And, you know, I mean, politically, I think it's a challenge for Republicans. I mean, whether you agree with it or not, I don't even know if it matters anymore. You know, when these high visible things decide to leave the state, it's going to hurt. And you're messing with basketball, obviously. So, you can't take this lightly, obviously. And you're seeing that when you talk about now up to 3 Republican senators that are saying maybe we do need to repeal this or at least take another look at changing it. I do think there's a question whether any changes or even a repeal would make a difference at this point. I mean, we're only, 50-some-odd days away from the election. I'm sure it's being considered. And I was frankly surprised at the delay in response and the type of response that Republican leaders gave as well. But I think they're trying to figure out what to do as well.
Our guest, Tim Boyum, here from Capitol tonight. Now, I was frankly a little surprised that Senator Barringer and also Rick Gunn and now Senator, Gary Pendleton, representative, have begun to waffle on this. I really felt like the Senate was, Berger runs a tight ship over there.
Well, you know, Barringer, for instance, is in a tough district. She's in a tough race. I mean, there was some reports this week that she's, you know, down big in her district. I think a lot of these folks that are in these suburban districts, Pendleton is one of those as well, are facing a huge hit because of HB2. We've been hearing about it behind the scenes for some time in the polls. Some speculate that's part of the reason why Charles Jeter left early. The state house member from Mecklenburg County as well. So, these urban districts, suburban districts, are a blend of, you know, they're purple, a lot of them. And for better or for worse, these sort of moderate voters, these swing voters in these purple districts don't like HB2, and it's impacting these people. I'm sure there's going to be critics out there saying, well, you know, you shouldn't change your views just because of winning an election, but that's the reality of politics. Politicians do that all the time. So I'm not overly surprised just because it's the reality of the politics. I'm very interested that they're all senators so far, although I do think there's more senators that are in those types of districts. And we haven't seen any movement in some of the House districts in Wake County, for instance, where there's an issue with that. You know, we're either talking about a Marilyn Avila, an Elton Dollar, although I would be surprised if those individuals would change their mind on it, but who knows? I'll say this at the end of the day, anything about 2016, it's mildly, I don't know how you could be surprised by anything anymore in some ways when you look at 2016 by anything, because it's just everything's so unpredictable.
Absolutely. I think you're very accurate on that. Make a big deal about this, but I think Pendleton is a representative, so I think he's the first House guy call for a repeal of this. And he's calling for a special session, actually, which I don't think that's going to happen. Do you? Tim? Did we lose
him? Are you guys there?
Yeah, I thought we lost you there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. It's fading in and out quite a bit, but I can hear you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Let me ask that again. I think, actually, Gary Pendleton is a representative from Wake County, and he's actually calling for a special session. I don't think that's going to happen. Do you?
I don't think so. You're right, and Gary is I don't think so. I'm hearing mixed things on that, too, about whether that is possible or not. I mean, obviously, if they're going to make any changes at all, there would need to be a special session. I don't know how that would happen at this point. I don't know what they could get passed. and Gary Pendleton has sort of said that to some extent, that, you know, he admits that there's enough Republicans that want this that it probably wouldn't pass. And so, you know, he would still want them to, so at least they know that they tried. But there's no way that the governor and House Speaker and Senate President Pro Tem, in whatever fashion that how they would call a special session, would call one unless they knew something was going to pass. That's just the nature of how it goes. And, you know, the truth is probably in a lot of ways, even if they did pass the bill, perhaps even if they repealed the bill, I think you're going to see some on the left in the LGBT community that, you know, they're not going to stand up and give a standing ovation. They would say it's too late. They would say probably, you know, they want to win elections too. And then they would probably push forward with saying, well, this is just the beginning. We want, you know, full protection for transgender individuals and, you know, the LGBT community. So to me, it seems very unlikely at this point that we would see some sort of session like that. But again, you know, I'm not seeing the polls behind the scenes and what's happening with people, but whether they think they can win or not. So they'll have to take a calculated risk of doing nothing or trying to do something. But I don't think there is a win-win for anyone on that side of the issue.
Our guest is Tim Boyum. Tim, let's just take off our, you know, official hats for a minute and just ponder this question, two guys talking. For me, I would prefer that my representative, you know, even if I don't agree, that they stand by what they, you know, originally believed. And I'm not sure there's a lot of political ground to be gained from anyone saying, well, yeah, I supported this, but now, you know, I don't think that does anybody any good. I think it makes them look weak. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, there is that argument, right? I mean, are they going to make moves just because it's the politically right thing to do? Or you know, as you're saying, you know, they should stand by the principles. I mean, I always have this issue with it when we're talking about elections about, you know, people talk about the flip-flopping. And you know, you can never change your mind no matter what. And I think that's wrong, too. You know, I think politicians should be able to evolve on issues. I think they should be able to change their minds if they get different information. You know, President Obama has talked about how he has evolved on the same-sex marriage issue. But at the same token, you know, you don't want people flip-flopping just because they are flip-flopping. You know, there's no reason behind it. There's no evolution of thought or new information that's been brought forward. So, I do think voters would not like it if people were just simply changing their mind because it meant winning an election. You know, that's not why you elect people to political office. But the truth is that these people got to win, and if this is just one issue that they would have to change, perhaps they think that's worth it to do that. I think there's varying degrees of voters, there's varying degrees of politicians, and it all depends on, you know, how steadfast you want them to be. The problem is I think we're in a political climate where people feel because they're going to lose donors, money is so important in this day and age in election, they're going to lose support of their hardcore voters, you know, because we're so partisan when it comes to politics these days. There's not a lot of gray or purple, depending on how you want to talk about politics. So people are put in tough binds, and people, you know, when they're backed into the corner, they'll make a lot of decisions they probably don't normally want to.
Well, I certainly would agree with you there. A lot of different polling has been coming out recently, Tim. Some have shown that Donald Trump has pulled even with, and some of them have shown him actually edging in front of Hillary Clinton here in North Carolina. The Civitas poll, which was released yesterday, showed them in a virtual dead heat. What do you make of that, and do you think that this is a trend that has gained some momentum and that Trump will continue to have positive momentum here in North Carolina?
Yeah, the polling is fascinating, to say the least, to follow. You know, I always tell people when we talk about polling, it's hard to just throw out numbers unless you know a lot about the polls and what they're using. We saw that just a few weeks ago when we would see a race where, you know, Hillary Clinton was up by two, and Richard Burr was up by two, and McCrory and Cooper were within a few points of each other. And then we saw a poll from ABC News where Clinton was up by like 11, and Cooper was up by seven, and I think Clinton was up by nine, and Cooper was up by seven, and Burr was up by two, I think. And the difference was that the NBC poll was using registered voters instead of likely voters. And of course, likely voters are much more likely to vote, and you can get a much more accurate poll out of that. So, this year in particular, it's hard to know who's going to vote, I think, and so that's a big challenge with polls as well. The Civitas poll is obviously very interesting because it's much different than what we've seen in the other races, particularly when you talk about the governor's race. Most polls have had Cooper up from 4 to 7 points, and then now McCrory's up. So you have to wonder why that is the case. That's not good or bad. But I'm interested in seeing more polls here in the next couple weeks to see if we can start to get a little bit consistency to these numbers. I know Elon University is releasing a poll on Monday that's going to have the governor's race in it. I believe PPP is going to have a poll out next Wednesday. So we can sort of gauge these races a lot better with a lot of numbers. I am often more interested in the average of polls than I am in individual polls because I think polling is a very difficult job to do these days. It's very hard to gauge, and just taking one, I think, is a challenge. And that's not a knock on any poll. And if you talk to pollsters, they'll know the challenge of getting voters to do these polls anymore, it seems like. So I think we'll have a pretty clear signal in the next couple of weeks. But I think that the fact that Trump and Burr have been sort of consistent around the same part, and for some reason Cooper's winning, has been fascinating. And I'm not quite sure I get that, but I guess we'll find out coming up soon.
Our guest is Tim Boyum here on What Matters in North Carolina. As you mentioned, the polls have been all over the place. It seems like the governor has had to spend more of his time battling the headlines as opposed to battling, his opponent. Do you think that that is going to continue, or do you think we're finally going to get down to candidate versus candidate at some point?
Yeah, I do think that it's been interesting to watch the governor's race and how that has gone down, so to speak. It almost seems like the roles are reversed and that Roy Cooper is running an incumbents-type race where he's sort of sitting back and letting the other candidates, make the public moves. And he's, just sort of sitting back, and he's not doing a lot of interviews. He's not doing a lot of press conferences. He's doing some ads. We only have one debate scheduled in the race for governor. Meanwhile, Pat McCrory's been very aggressive. He's been doing a lot of interviews, a lot of news conferences. He wants to do more debates. HB2 issue, it's whether you agree with it or disagree with it, it clearly is a challenge for Republicans electorally, so he's having to play defense on the issue a lot. And it seems like it just keeps dragging on. Everyone kept saying in the spring, well, it's still going to be an issue 6-7 months from now, and I think the answer clearly is yes. As I mentioned, we still have to hear from the CIAA. Could the PGA say something about future U.S. Opens in Pinehurst? And so as that issue keeps dragging on, he's having to play defense. But messaging is a big part of politics, whether the facts are right or wrong. And they have him on defense, and we'll see if that continues. I mean, Pat McCrory would much rather be talking about, the economic turn in the state and the unemployment rate and whatnot. But the other stuff is grabbing headlines. It's keeping the headlines, and he feels like he needs to respond to it all. And so that's why it comes across that way. And whether that's going to hurt him where he can't win, I don't know. But he definitely is, you're right, he's having to mess with the headlines on almost a daily basis.
Our guest is Tim Boyum here on What Matters in North Carolina. Tim, we saw some pretty bizarre medical-type symptoms or maladies in Hillary Clinton Sunday. She looked like she had to be almost physically lifted into a vehicle. There's been much made about her health. What is your take on the health of Hillary Clinton at this point, from what you can tell?
Well, I mean, I don't have her medical records, and I haven't looked at everything that came out. You either have to believe her doctor or you don't. From all reports yesterday, including our reporters that were there, she looked, fine, Her voice was still a little raspy, although after having pneumonia, I would assume that's the case. You know, and we saw what happened with Donald Trump this week with Dr. Oz. I mean, it's a fine line. And I've talked to a lot of people on both sides of this issue and both sides of the parties about whether, you know, we expect tax returns to be public. Do we expect public health records to be public? And I think unless it's something that could affect, you know, their presidency, you know, whether it's some sort of cognitive function or something like that. So, you know, I, at some point at the end of the day, if there's not going to be this push to have to push out medical records, I think we just have to believe the doctors and move forward. You know, I talked to Chelsea Clinton on Wednesday, and she told me that she didn't even know her mother had pneumonia until she came to her apartment on Sunday. So, and she talks to her every day. And, boy, when we put that up on Twitter, you should have seen the response from people that are against Hillary Clinton, that were saying there's no way, she talks to her every day. And those people will never believe that she's healthy, even if she had an independent doctor come in. So unless we decide that we're going to have independent doctors come in, they're going to go through a rigor of testing and those results will be pushed, I don't know where else you go with this except for to say that her doctor says she's fit for president. Unless we have any evidence to the contrary, that's the case. From a political standpoint, the video was awful, clearly. I mean, you don't want that to be the image of someone that's running for president to be sort of drugged into a van because she couldn't, you know, stand or help herself. So it's a challenging issue, and that's what happens when we have, you know, two of the oldest candidates running for president ever. So it's going to be scrutinized. I think the question is how much is fair game to the public.
Tim, in terms of other issues that are going on around the state, it's been fairly quiet once you get past the politics and HB2. Blue Cross and Blue Shield, however, hit with a huge fine, $3.6 million. Some of the companies have pulled out of the state for the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. Blue Cross looks like it might be the only team left on the field to offer medical insurance under the Affordable Care Act. Do you see this as something that is going to be a problem for our state in the long term or even in the near term?
Well, I mean, I've talked to Wayne Goodwin about this as well. I mean, anytime you don't have any competition, if we're talking about specifically the exchanges in the Affordable Care Act, I think there's definitely a grave concern. Blue Cross Blue Shield hasn't exactly been, you know, full-throated supporting that they're going to stay on this exchange forever either. I think that definitely is a concern moving forward. You know, with the fine that happened, I think Blue Cross was just willing to pay the fine and move on and just, you know, move past that issue that had been hanging out there for some time. And the, you know, Wayne Goodwin, the insurance commission, have been weighing that decision for some time, and it was a massive fine. But, you know, it's interesting that the Affordable Care Act has not become a larger issue because of all these health questions. Yesterday, Hillary Clinton took her own health, and since she's doing better, she got to stay at home, which brings her to the point that not everybody can do that and turned it into an argument about paid sick leave and paid time off for illness. And so that became the bigger topic. So, I mean, there's only 50-some-odd days left. It would be surprising to me if it became a major part of this election moving forward because Donald Trump has not pushed the issue as hard, and that typically would be a Republican issue moving forward. So, you know, just bringing it back to your main point about North Carolina, you know, from the exchange standpoint, as long as Republican leaders are in charge, they're not going to fully support the exchanges or the Affordable Care Act. So I do think it's going to be an issue in the state, and lack of competition probably will create issues. You know, Blue Cross and Blue Shield have some big decisions in the next few months on this, and so we'll just have to watch it closely.
Well, Tim, we will be sure to watch you closely as you host Capitol tonight. You do an excellent job. And as always, thank you very much for being our guest on What Matters in North Carolina.
It's always an honor. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir. Joining us now on What Matters in North Carolina are the Benham brothers, David and Jason. And it's a pleasure to have you guys on the show today. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Mark. Appreciate it.
Well, I was intrigued by the Christian Post had printed some thoughts that you guys had as a result of the NCAA pulling championship games out of North Carolina in response to the bill known as HB2. Can you tell us, you said that the NCAA is being used by the LGBT sexual revolution. Can you expound on that thought?
Well, it's not just the LGBT sexual revolution. It's the overall moral revolution that wants to flip the quote-unquote system upside down, and they'll exploit any issue they possibly can. And what's happening now is we're seeing transgender issues exploited, although it's 0.03% of the population is affected. But there was absolutely no cases in North Carolina of discrimination against transgender people at all. But so the Human Rights Campaign comes in and creates the issue. So what they do is they have to frame it. So they frame it by first creating the conflict and then by redefining the terms. And then after they do that, they facilitate their support network with all of their talking points. Well, this is who's a hater and this is who's a bigot. And then after that, they fracture all dissent. And so what's happening with the NCAA and with the ACC is that they're just simply doing the Human Rights Campaign's bidding. It's ridiculous that the NCAA, think about it this way, they are removing their sex-segregated sports programs, their championship games, because we have sex-segregated restrooms. It's the height of hypocrisy, and they also actually compete in China and other places. So if they're really caring about human rights, they should take a much deeper look at all of their policies.
Well, I certainly don't disagree with you there. The hypocrisy was pretty blatant when the NBA pulled their All-Star game out of Charlotte because of, quote, you know, discrimination. And yet they are involved in developmental activities in China where homosexuals are, you know, certainly not treated nearly as well as they are here. So what do you make of the rampant hypocrisy in all of this?
Well, they're just doing what the world does. I mean, when people are overcome by the spirit of the world, and there's not the light of the gospel that's shining forth from the pulpits that's spoken very clearly in the midst of cultural confusion, well, then people are just going to do what they do. It's up to the church to be the salt and light. It's up to Christians. This is why our message, as we travel the country, our message is really to Christians. And of course, we speak to Americans, and we're freedom-loving guys, and we're patriots. But more than anything, we're Christians, and it's up to us to be the conscience of the state. And when we refuse to shine the light, when we refuse to even enter the conversation when it comes to transgenderism or when it comes to homosexuality or when it comes to any of these issues, then what happens is the narrative is shaped without the Christian voice. That's what we're seeing. That's why the NBA can pull out and there's rampant hypocrisy with the reasons. The same thing with the NCAA. They're talking all about fairness and inclusion. Well, what do they mean, fairness and inclusion? They are the height of, according to what they would call fairness and inclusion, is you can't draw a gender distinction. But they do that every single day that the athletes compete. They draw gender distinctions. And what about transitioning of males that are transitioning into females? Can they now compete in women's sports? Well, according to the NCAA, they have to go through 1 year's hormone-suppressing therapy to minimize their testosterone level, and then they have to get medical tests and before they can actually join a female team. And even then, the female team no longer is female. It becomes a mixed-use team. That's ridiculous. So if they're really all about fairness and inclusion, then they should really look at their policies. So they're going to be hypocritical until Christians once again engage the conversation and bring some clarity.
Our guests are David and Jason Benham, the Benham brothers, here on What Matters in North Carolina. As you were talking, I couldn't help but agree with you. This is probably one of the more ridiculous conversations that we're having to have here in North Carolina over the past several months. I mean, we're talking about people changing genders and going to the bathrooms, and it really is incredible. And yet you made a point that I want to kind of zero in on, because a couple of days ago I was talking with a guest from the Family Research Council, and they made a point that, frankly, I hadn't thought of yet. Where are the pastors? And I put this out on social media because it really was something that I felt compelled to repeat. We have thousands and thousands of churches and influential members of the community in the form of pastors, and yet I'm sure the word transgender hasn't come across the lips of probably a handful in the entire state since all of this began to be controversial. And so the question, Franklin Graham yesterday here in the local newspaper, where are the pastors? Where are the leaders of the church who should be standing up for these kind of basic, not just Christian values, but common sense values in our society?
I could tell you where the pastors are. They are in Saul's tent and refusing to deal with Goliath. But there are Davids that are out there in culture, business leaders, those that they don't care about keeping a congregation or a big platform or a business or maybe a promise of a significant political position or something. They're willing to face these Goliaths head on and speak the truth and speak it in love and watch the truth set the captives free. Another thing, you know, you started off the question by saying, can you believe we're even talking about this? If it was 10 years ago you and I were talking about this, people would have thought we were crazy, absolute lunatics. Even 5 years ago, people would have thought we were nuts. But what's happening is we're flipping the system upside down. And when I say the system, I'm talking about morality. I'm talking about civil society when it comes to moral virtue, and I compare it to traffic patterns. Look, millions and millions of Americans across this great country are driving their vehicles, and they are following traffic patterns. They drive on the right side of the road. They yield to oncoming traffic. Red means stop. Green means go. But now all the people inside the cars may believe a myriad of different things. I mean, from all different races and religions and even sexual orientation and all of these things, you've got all these people, but they can engage driving their vehicles safely because they believe that red means stop and green means go. Now, when you begin to change those moral boundaries, all of a sudden, traffic's going to get a bit dangerous, and that's where we are in America today. We are now beginning to change the moral boundaries of civil society, and I'm afraid that it will come unraveling. It's just a matter of time, and I'm not going to let it happen on my watch. My kids will at least know if it comes unraveled, their dad was standing.
Well, that certainly is something commendable, and I stand right there with you. Our guests are the Benham brothers here on What Matters in North Carolina. As you guys travel around, and you're certainly all over the country, and you meet people, what are, you know, I like to call them just plain folks. What are folks saying to you about where we are as a society? Are people just apathetic? Are they alarmed? Has it not really sunk in yet, the ramifications of all of these things?
I can tell you, and this is David, I'm still speaking. I've been speaking the whole time because my brother got on and could not hear you, so he had to hop back off. But he's sitting right here next to me. I'll give him the phone in a minute.
Okay.
But there's a verse in the Bible, in the book of Proverbs, that says, when the righteous rule, the people rejoice, but when the wicked rule, the people groan. What we hear across the country are groanings of people that are sick and tired of watching our voices not be heard. We're watching liberal media suppress a conservative viewpoint, or a Christian viewpoint for that matter, and really just push the talking points of the Obama administration, the Human Rights Campaign, Right Wing Watch, and various others. And so people are groaning, but they're sick of it. They really are. And the thing that Jason and I are talking to people, especially coming into this election, is that we can have a strategic call to Republicans, but we need a spiritual call for repentance. And until we have that, no one leader is going to make America great again. And the Republican Party is one of the biggest problems. And I thank God that the platform has definitely strengthened. But, you know, we are watching leaders. It doesn't matter, Democrat, Republican. These political leaders have basically sold their birthright for a mess of pottage. They've refused to stand on principle and instead lick their fingers pragmatically and find out which way the wind of the polls are blowing. And they'll continue doing that until pastors begin to wake up, until the folks sitting in the pews say, you know what, I'm actually going to be salt and light right where I am. I'm going to enter the conversation, whether it's at the water cooler or on social media.
Well, I think that another question that I think bears asking is your thoughts to Martin Castro. Of course, the U.S. Commissioner of Civil Rights came out with a report a couple of days ago, basically calling religion code words. Religious liberty and religious freedom are code words for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, etc. I was pretty well insulted by that. What was your take?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you this. So were millions of other Americans, but it doesn't matter because you can insult conservatives. You can insult Christians. That's politically correct. But the thing is here is back to our point about the pastors. And informing their congregation about the nature and value of religious liberty and how it's our first freedom, you don't even hear it. So when there's a vacancy there, the narrative is in another way, and this is all part of the radical left's agenda. You frame the issue, then you facilitate support, then you fracture dissent. And part of framing the issue is defining the terms. You have to create conflict and define the terms. So right now, they are systematically and methodically redefining all of our terms. And so now religious liberty is going to become a license to discriminate. Religion is going to become just an intolerant, bigoted, hateful view if you maintain Orthodox Christianity. If you believe in religion of the new Jesus that's out there, small J, who preaches L-U-V, not L-O-V-E, with absolutely no moral standards, well, then that religion is tolerated. But no relationship with Jesus will be tolerated in this country.
Well, it certainly is something that I personally am very passionate about, trying to get the word out. And this show is not designed to be, you know, a place where I can stand on my head and preach, but I'm trying through this platform to get people, not just people of faith, but people who listen to understand that we are in a very dangerous time in our society, and that the erosion of moral values, things that have made this country great for, you know, 200 years and more, are being eroded and disintegrated right before our very eyes. And the apathy that I'm confronted with is just so frustrating. I know that people are concerned about their cable TV and their cell phones, but it's time that people need to wake up, in my opinion.
Oh, you're right. And the sin of Sodom, many people believe the sin of Sodom was homosexuality. Well, that was just an effect. That was a result of the sin of Sodom. That was part of the sin of Sodom. But the sin of Sodom, the root of it, was that the people of Sodom were overfed, arrogant, and unconcerned. That's exactly where we are. That right there labels the American church. We are arrogant, we are certainly overfed, and we are unconcerned. We've got more potlucks than you can shake a stick at, and we actually have transitioned church into being a bounce house instead of a boot camp, where we learn how to fight the spiritual fight, where we learn how to be good husbands and fathers and leaders, where we learn how to resist evil so that good can flourish. No longer, not anymore. So it's going to take a revival, and that revival will come when we begin to speak the truth and speak it in love, and we do it whatever the cost.
Well, guys, I know you're busy, and I certainly appreciate you taking time to talk with me here today and our listeners on What Matters in North Carolina. I appreciate all the work that you are doing, and that you are certainly not at all backing down or intimidated by the world around you. I believe you have a new book coming out, Living Among Lions. Is that correct?
Yes, we our first book, Whatever the Cost, was all about our story. The second book, Living Among Lions, is all about how to help you build your story. We take the principles of Daniel, and we talk all about how you don't have to just survive in today's America. You can thrive. When you live with conviction that transforms your heart, commitment that transforms your lifestyle, you will have the courage that will transform this nation.
Well, I will certainly direct our listeners to all of the usual outlets to get a copy of Living Among Lions. David and Jason Benham, thank you very much for being our guests today here on What Matters in North Carolina.
Thank you so much, Mark. God bless you, man.
All right, you too. Thank you. Well, that was pretty cool talking to the Benham brothers, and actually put that segment together pretty quickly. And they're from right here in North Carolina, but they travel all over the country. And I can't stress enough, really, this is sort of something that's kind of gotten inside of me in a passionate way. Started talking earlier in the week with the Family Research Council folks about their bus tour, and Brent Keelan, he said, "Where are the pastors?" And that just resonated with me. And folks, are you hearing anything on Sunday morning or in your, you know, Sunday school class or Wednesday night, whatever it is you're doing? These are issues that are not just political, but they strike at the very heart of our society. And I would just say that it's time for people to get engaged, and that includes pastors. Franklin Graham, I wrote this in social media, what Brent had said, and the very next day, yesterday, Franklin Graham, big headline in the local paper, "Where are the pastors?" And I think this is something that really needs to be heralded, because you see, these are not like, okay, we're going to tax you more for peanuts at a baseball game. These are issues that strike at the core of values and morals and things that our country was built upon and has standed upon for over two centuries. And it's time for people of faith to stand up and say, wait a minute. You know, we're not going to have things that we think are important and are real and that we value just taken away and eroded so easily. There should be outrage among people of faith about this whole HB2 thing and the NCAA and the ACC and women and little girls' safety and privacy being put at risk. There should be absolute outrage. Lieutenant Governor Forrest said people are calling his office, and I believe it. I believe that they're calling him. He said they're calling and saying, stand strong, stand firm. People, as I've said a couple of times now, I think everyday folks, they have common sense. They don't want men in the shower with their daughters. Come on now. But it's time that people who have positions where other people listen to them and who are supposed to be the standard bearers in our society for morality, that they get involved with this and they start talking to their congregations, like the Benham brothers said, about how important religious liberty is. And no sooner had he said that than I looked at this thing I had printed out where the Civil Rights Commission wants to call religious liberty code for discrimination and Islamophobia and homophobia. Folks, they are coming after not just conservatives, not just people of faith. They're coming after it all. And if you don't think that's true, I'm sorry, but it is. And I would have to tell you, it is true. And it's time that people get engaged and get involved and stand up and say, no, we're not going to give away our religious freedom. We're not going to give away our religious liberty. We're not going to give away our Second Amendment rights to keep and bear arms. And we certainly are not going to give away our freedom of religion and speech. Well, it's been a huge week here on What Matters in North Carolina. Thank you so much for listening. As always, you can find us in the iTunes and Google Play stores. Please encourage your friends to go there and download the podcast, or go to freedomactionnetwork.com for any of our great shows. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.